This is Luxury.
And Diallo,
the hosts of One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and U.S. Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on @HeartbeatAudio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Inside Jokes with Kevin Hart.
Welcome. Welcome, world. Today's episode is going to be a special one. It's going to be a special one because we're getting inside one of the most brilliant minds. And I do mean that. I don't just say that to say it. I mean it. We're getting inside of one of the most brilliant minds in comedy. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the man, the myth, the legend, Jerry Seinfeld. God damn. Hey, Jerry.
Thank you, Kevin.
What'd you think about that introduction, Jerry?
I was awesome. Under any other circumstances, I would complain about that. You never want to say that. You never want to bring anybody out with too strong an intro, as you well know.
Yeah.
Because you're taking away their first step. Talk about, if I can use a basketball analogy, that's your first step. First thing out of your mouth when you hit the stage, to me, that's that in the martial arts, they talk about that first move the set is about that first move. Is like, you know, do you think of comedy like as a martial art that way, that it's very much about quick leverage?
Absolutely. Now that you said it, I have.
Yeah.
In the past, I haven't, but it's all about being first.
Yeah, right.
It's all about being first.
Yeah.
In this case, I can give you that amazing introduction because here's the interesting thing about it. It's not followed by an applause button or nothing.
Right, right.
You're technically coming out to the smallest crowd.
It's really nice. And it means a great deal to me to hear you say that. It really does. That's definitely going to be the best thing that happened to me today. It just happened. You're saying how much you're loving, that you're falling in love with this. Tell me what's going on.
Well, here's what I'm doing. I'm doing a podcast. And, you know, I never saw myself getting into the podcast.
Right, yeah,
world.
Yeah.
But the reason why I decided to do it, because I said...
You're a good-looking guy. Good-looking guys don't look for ways to just hide behind a microphone in the dark.
Yeah, Jerry, I don't need to do this shit. I don't have to be on radio. I don't need this shit. I don't need this shit. But here's the thing. I have so many friends in the business of comedy that are going through shit, have gone through shit, have like experienced some of the craziest things. And Jerry, I'm not even talking about, you know, like the funny, crazy stories. I'm talking about real shit. I'm talking about people like that have suffered from depression, you know,
right.
People yeah. who have contemplated, you know, I mean, some of the worst shit ever. When this comes to life, and these people are attached to funny. These people are attached, to the thought process of being funny and only being funny. And I said,
right.
If I can talk to comics, have open dialogue, real conversation, and that real conversation leads to information that you may not have never known or you may have. I said, that's a dope experience because this is what people don't know. So if I can get comics to just to go down that path and show the depth to them, I said, then that's a different experience. And that's what this is about. It's just about creating a different experience.
You know, I did Comedians in Cars for a long time.
Yeah, Jerry, I did it. It's only on my resume. It's in my reel.
That was a hot day. Remember how it was hot that day?
It was hot as fuck, actually. You had me in that goddamn car with the top down.
You bought me sneakers, which I still have. But I'll tell you, here's what I remember the most about doing the experience. I'm sure you've already felt this. When you're doing these types of interviews and these talks with people, you see a map in front of you. They're talking about something, and then you see this like little map. Or it's almost like you're almost like a Boy Scout in the woods, and you're looking at the trail, and you go, oh, well, I could go down this trail, or I could go down that trail. I can't go down both trails, right? And then it really gets your mind going, right? Of like, but the trick is to go down the trails. Don't just ask your questions. I don't know if you prepare questions, or it seemed to me to be completely unnecessary for you to prepare questions.
Yeah, I don't prepare shit. Yeah. I don't do that. But you're absolutely right about the trails. Like you have options.
Yeah, it's an interesting game, mental game to play. And I enjoy being on either side of it.
Are you still doing Comedians in Cars, Jerry?
Not at the moment. I got a hold of another whale, and I'm trying to capture this whale that has hooked onto my harpoon, and I am.
How do you do it? How do you do it, Jerry? That's the question of the day. How do you do it, Jerry? What the fuck? What do you do all day? That's what I want to know.
Okay, which part of it you want to know? I'll give you any part of it you want.
Well, just what do you do? I know you love cars. I know it's an amazing hobby.
That is not what I do.
That's not what you do. All right. I know that you love your family.
We have to say that in case the wives are listening.
Yes, you have to say that. I'm well aware of that game as well. I don't know if my wife is up or not, but I do this right below our bedroom, so I'm quite sure she may be. So you gotta love your family. You see, I put the volume on that one.
When I was younger, Kevin, and I in my 20s and 30s, I really felt like I wasn't really going anywhere, and I wasn't gonna go anywhere. But I loved what I did, and I thought I'd still pretty great just being a comic. You know, I was just playing clubs, you know, and I was okay with that. I made some money, and I kind of decided I had two things that I got to do in a day, and one of them is work on comedy, and two is I got to do some exercise. And I thought if I get those two things done every single day, at the end of my life, I will have money and I'll be in good health. And I thought, and that's what I thought, that's not a bad place to wind up. Now, this is way before I had the maturity, you know, the arrested development maturity of comedians is a whole other subject we could talk about, because I never understood why you would, family, marriage, you know, women were just a distraction. You know, it was just, I didn't think that you grow in those, down those roads. Mm-hmm. So my most important thing in the day is working on some stuff. Work on some stuff. I had some stuff I want to do. Where am I? What, you know, every time you look at your stuff or do your stuff on stage, something happens to it. Right? Because the brain, the comedy brain will never leave anything alone. Right? Anything someone pitches you or anything you say yourself, you go, but maybe I could do it a little better this way or that way. So occupying that brain, keeping that going is how we get somewhere, because our path is a slow, slow path. Right?
It really is. It really is.
Excruciatingly slow. Right? Somebody, how long have you been working on that joke? My whole life.
I'm still working on this bit.
Still working on it.
Do you feel, Jerry, your comedy mind has gotten stronger the older you have gotten? Like at this point in your life, do you feel like you're capable of being the best version of a comedian? You.
Yeah, because it's been an obsession for me. It's an obsession. It's a love and an obsession. And I know that that's good for me. That's my personality. If you're obsessive, I don't think it's bad to be obsessive. Mm. I mean, there's one step beyond of anything, of course. But I am completely obsessed. And the audience wants that. They pay for that. I don't want to see somebody who's kind of into it.
Wow.
In anything, right?
Wow.
When you get a new car and you sit in that car, the first thing you can tell is, wow, whoever made this, they were into it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I care about. That's all I care about. I don't care what you do. I just want to see people and talk to people and be around people that are into it. And the dumber the thing is, kind of the cooler it is to me.
The better it is.
Yeah.
Because it's more different, it's more authentic.
Right.
You are... When I said earlier, and I was giving you an introduction, I wasn't bullshit when I said just brilliant minds in the game. I mean, the reason why I not only respect you, but why I'm in awe of the way you approach your craft, it's the way that you process funny. It's the way that you break down funny. And it's not, I haven't seen it duplicated. I haven't even seen people come close to what you would call the Jerry Seinfeld style of comedy. No, like it's a weird thing that you do, and it is frustrating. Uh-huh. You're the comic that makes other comics mad because you take something that's so small.
Right.
And you make it so fucking big.
Right, right.
You make it so big. It's something as simple as answering a telephone. Sitting in a chair, and the chair has the mechanics to go up and down.
Right.
Or a desk. What's the drawer that's in the middle of the desk for? What do we need it? Like the things that you come up with and the questions that you ask and the way that you observe is special, man.
Thank you. I'll tell you one of the ones that really was exciting for me. I had a whole bit about those outdoor porta potties, and I did a bit about the spring tension on the door is always a little lighter than you think it's going to be. Now, when I think of something like that, I think, well, there's no way you're going to get people to. That's not going to work, you know, but so that becomes my thing. I'm going to see if I can get people to remember that door is a little easier to open than I thought it was going to be.
One of the funniest things you said to me, we were doing Comedians in Cars and we were just talking. It was just conversation. And we had saw it was two homeless people. And, you know, this is nothing, you know, an attack. God damn the times today. There's nothing, an attack of homeless people or putting down homeless people. But Jerry goes, it was so simple. We were just talking and, you know, we were driving, we saw a light. And he said, the crazy thing when you see two homeless people, you said, one of them were wrong. And I stopped for a second, Jerry. He said, somebody was wrong. Somebody said, we're going to be fine. And they weren't. He said,
I don't remember that.
He said, somebody said, hey, we're going to be fine. And guess what? They weren't fine. And now look, he said,
I don't remember that.
He said, one of them were wrong. It was simple. It wasn't a bit.
I know what it was. It was one homeless person is always giving advice to the other one.
You said somebody was wrong, whatever it was.
I would not do that if I was you, you know.
it's the way that you fucking think, man. And it's just, I don't have it. I'm never going to have it. No, not like that. Not like that. Mine's have to come in the shapes of stories. And, you know, I got to create these fucking things in my head. And then that's where I get off. I love the idea of starting a story and completing a story and putting a bunch of shit in there. That's my thing. I can't do your thing. I can't.
Nobody can do anybody else's thing.
No, that is true. That's true. But the people that try to do other people's things are the people that end up coming up short because they're not being themselves.
Of course.
Yeah. Here's what I'm trying to do now. I'm at this point in my career where my focus is making sure that when it's all over, I go out on top.
Right.
I don't want to go out in the middle.
What does that mean?
I don't want to go out.
What is that?
Well, that's the thing. I'm trying to figure that the fuck out, Jerry. That's what I'm about to ask you this question, because I feel like you've done it, right? When I say go out on top, it means go out when you feel like, yo, I'm ready to be done. I'm happy with where I am, what I am, but I don't need all the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
So I'm going to step away, right?
I'll tell you, if you want to know what I think about what the top is, or there's only one top, dog. When in our life, to me, there's only one question. Are you working or are you not working? And that's it.
Mm.
That's it. And you, obviously, you're one of the greatest workers of all time that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And you will never stop working. That's why you will always be a huge success. Because you love and you treasure work. You respect work. Some people look to avoid it. It draws you like a beam of light. The word work, when someone says the word work to Kevin Hart, his pupils dilate.
I fucking get it. It's a big thing for me.
It is. It is your thing. And that is what I consider to be it. What you're working at or on is way down the list to me. It's that you're working. You're working. Kevin, I'm quite a bit older than you, and you're gonna get to my age, and you're gonna start talking with somebody else who's your age, and you're gonna go, whatever happened to, and you're gonna start listing names, and you're gonna realize you're in the tiniest group of people that are still working.
Holy shit.
Still working. And that is greatness. That's the top. He's still working. I don't care where he's working or what he's working on. He's still working. And that's what that is my dedication to the comedy gods, who I believe our purpose on earth is to please the comedy gods. I'm not a master of comedy. I am a servant of it. And I work to please them. And they don't like arrogance. They don't like overconfidence. They don't like, they don't like when you pursue things that you're not good at. And they want you to pursue comedy, pursue us.
The arrogant comic is annoying to me.
I don't mind arrogance if it's well disguised and it's funny.
No, I'm talking about undisguised.
Okay, well, undisguised is a problem. All art is disguising work.
The comic that loves the craft and that can, you know, pick apart the craft, that's different. I'm talking about the arrogant comic. I'm not a fan of the arrogant comic.
Kevin, our ecosystem is so toxic. The water that we swim in kills.
It's the worst.
It kills almost all of us.
It's the worst.
It's the worst. It's which we swim with fish that swim in New York Harbor. You got to be so tough.
That's the toughest water to be in.
Yeah.
That's the tough. A fish in the New York Harbor, goddamn, that's some of the worst time. Is it jail?
So you never have to look at a comedian that you think is ill-equipped, not doing his job. You don't care for this. You don't care for that. Don't worry. The water itself
is just
purified.
Oh, my God. Jerry, did you experience a high level of, let's call it toxic, that toxic environment that we're talking about, you know, at your height or on the rise to your height, you know, when it was, oh my God, the show and everything. Like, did you experience that from comics?
You know, here and there, if I wanted to really dig, I could come up with some things, but it's too minor to mention.
Got you.
Too minor to mention.
Got you. And that's how it always should be, honestly. Maybe, whatever. Doesn't matter.
I got no time for it.
All right, guys, we got to stop for a second, man. Got to take a commercial break. I don't want to, but we have to. Right now, we're on Inside Jokes. We're inside the mind of Jerry Seinfeld. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Inside Jokes with host Kevin Hart.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert. And I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert. And I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure. Because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show, because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Now back to Inside Jokes, hosted by Kevin Hart.
Jerry, goddamn, man, what a conversation. We're back. For our listeners, if you're just now tuning in, this is Inside Jokes. We're talking to Jerry Seinfeld. What an amazing mind this is. What an amazing person he is. The conversation is flowing. Mount Rushmore, you said. Who does Jerry Seinfeld love when it comes to comedy? Who are your favorites? If you can give me your Mount Rushmore of comedy. If you can give me your what that looks like.
I started this Mount Rushmore thing. I think I started it when I did a show with Don Rick. When I did a Comedians in Cars with Don Rickles.
God damn.
And I started this Mount Rushmore, and then I seemed to be everywhere. I'll tell you, there are comedians that I will study. I study and I laugh at them there, because the details of what they do are so intricately beautiful and perfect. Mm-hmm. I can never get over it. And one of those is Bernie Mac. I will watch Bernie Mac. I have seen every clip that exists of Bernie Mac on YouTube 50 times each. I watch them and, you know, he's one of these guys that nobody talks about Bernie Mac's writing, but when I watch a comic, when I watch anything, I see the script next to the guy and I look at the words and the, mm-hmm. the economy, the structure, the what he's going for, how he expresses it. I find him to be a miraculous comedian, and he's so funny. The material's so funny. The performance is so funny. And I don't think he was one of these. He wasn't one of these lockdown guys, right? He just kind of went out there. Mm-hmm. I met him once in a stairwell at DreamWorks in a parking garage, and we stopped and we just talked for a couple minutes. And this was but way before I actually got into him after he passed.
Wow.
And but that's one of the guys that I really, really love. But I watch a lot of Rickles just to laugh. And also, he's interesting because he's got nothing. He goes out there, he's got nothing.
He just goes.
He just, goes.
He just fucking goes.
Yeah, but the energy and is fascinating.
I got a crazy Rickles story for you. It's an insane Rickles story. I go to this Vanity Fair party, right? Shit is starting to happen. My first and my last name now matter. That's Kevin Hart, right? Don Rickles is at the party, and somebody tells me Don Rickles is at the party, and I say, I gotta fucking meet Don Rickles. I gotta meet him, right? I gotta meet him. I have to meet him, right?
If you're a comic and he's in the
Don
room,
Don Rickles
have to.
Sees me.
Yeah.
I don't even know how Don Rickles knows who I am. You know, it's just a big moment. Hey, it's just energy, right? Crazy energy. Swear to God. Swear to God, right. My kids, I'm not lying right when I say this. Don sees me. He goes, God, look at him. He takes his hand. Smacks my face twice. Pat, pat. Right? He smacks my face twice. He goes, pat, pat. And he says, looks like a, this is no bullshit. All right. This was not malicious. This is the era that Don came up in comedy to my listener. He goes, he looks like a little monkey. Right?
Right, right.
Pat, pat on my face. And I said, oh man, okay. I said, okay, well, what? Oh, shit. That definitely wasn't cool, but what do I say to Don Rickles? How do I correct it? What do I have to do? There's nothing I can do. After I did it, he then pinches my cheek like a fucking kid. He pinches it. It's like, I love you, kid. And that was it. And he just fucking like sat back down. And it was like this weird silence. Like, and I just turned around in my suit and I was like, well, I guess that was it. I guess that was it.
Did he know you?
I can tell either somebody warned him.
Right.
Of who I was like before I got to him. And like he like went with just energy. Like, you know, you don't know who a person is, but you just give them energy.
Yeah, right. You know
what I mean? Hey, that thing. What's up, man? Like it was like that. I could tell it was like that. He didn't know, but somebody else knew. But it wasn't malicious. It's like, you know, this was his era. That was his era of comedy. So he was just being personable in the moment. But it was like
there's a thoughtlessness
Exactly. It wasn't. And I know, you know, so our listeners, they'll go, what? But no, I'm telling you, as a person that was there, it wasn't. And that's why it was for me, the funny part about it was the exit, because he was at a table.
Right.
So I just approached the table and then he just sat back down and like just went back into a conversation with whoever he knew. And I was just standing there for a second. And I was like, all right, well,
yeah,
I guess that's it. And I was like, okay, bye.
You know, I'm a very anti-PC guy in comedy. Mm-hmm. But when I do watch some of his old stuff, when his black stuff, I feel uncomfortable. I don't feel good.
No, he has some shit. If you go look at it, it's woof.
Yeah, right. You look and you go, even in that moment, I don't know.
I just got light headed. How do you feel about where we are now? You know, when you say you're anti-PC,
I think we're fine.
You think we're fine?
Yes, I think we're fine. It's like Lindsey Vonn, you know that phenomenal female skier? Mm-hmm. I would say, if you're Lindsey Vonn, I don't care where you put the gates on the mountain. Put them anywhere you want. Mm. I'm going to make the gate. Yeah, I'm going to make the gate. Wherever you put it, I'm going to make it. And comedy changes, like culture changes. Culture is a liquid. It's not a solid. Mm. It's a liquid. Always changing, always moving. Every day it's a slightly different shape. Today is a different shape than yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Way different. And we're going to feel it and we're going to work it. And that's our job.
I was going to say, that's a part of the job.
That's a job. You got to feel it. If you can't feel it, you know, again, the toxic ecosystem will take care of it. It will self-correct.
Well, you just said that's the job. And I mean, you know, frustrating at times it may be, or, you know, ridiculous it may get to, but ultimately it's our job to adjust.
And it's not as hard as being funny to begin with.
No, that's the hardest part. That's the hardest part.
That's the hardest part. People don't like to hear us complaining about how hard comedy is, but how could we not?
But I also, you know what though, Jerry, I have no problem with respect. You know, when it boils down to respect or making people feel respected, or, you know, making sure that you're now taking an approach to the craft of one of just being aware. I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
I don't have a problem being aware. Like, that's not this. It's those aren't difficult changes to make. You know what I mean? Like, you can get your point across and be aware and be respectful and still be funny.
Right.
It doesn't have to be the crazy malicious. And that's never been my style anyway. So those adjustments aren't hard ones. I think, you know, somewhere along the lines in this temperature that we're in, a gear has shifted, and it's almost as if the world started looking at comedians as political figures.
Right.
At one point.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's where it gets funky for me.
Yes. Opinion leaders.
Yes.
Nobody ever changed their mind because of us.
Because of a fucking comic.
No.
No, never. It's never happened. And that's where it gets funky for me.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
You know, I was asked a question. First of all, and this is where it gets weird. I'm doing a junket. Doing a junket for a fucking movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reporters asked me, like, it was almost like an activist question.
Right.
I said, you do know I'm a fucking comic, right? And he's like, yeah, but what's your approach and take? I don't have one. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Right. In my opinion, what we do is so far above, so much a higher calling and a more important life contribution to other, to mankind, is to make people laugh. And all that political stuff and ethical issues and social stuff is a few steps down. If you want to do it in your stuff, go ahead. You know, to me, to just Laurel and Hardy, to make a film about moving a piano up a stairs,
still be good.
And 100 years later, I can still watch it and laugh. That then you touched it. You touched, that's the light. Touch that, make that, give that to people. Then you gave them, you really gave them something. You really gave them something. There's not one Clinton joke that anybody wants to hear today. So that's why I don't have a talent for it anyway. But what, to me, it's a waste of. I'm looking for that joke that anytime they see it, it's going to put a smile on their face, make them laugh, relieve the pain for a minute.
When I ask myself, you know, yo, not only do I check in just to say, are you on? You happy? You enjoying? You know, these are my little check-ins in the morning when I'm in the gym. Fucking happy. How you feeling? I'm happy. I love to be happy.
Right.
I like the feeling that comes with being happy. And there was a light bulb that went off for me at one point in my career where it wasn't just about me being funny. You know, because in the beginning, that's what it was. It was like, yo, I'm fucking funny. I like this. Like, I like being funny. There was a switch. There was a switch in like just a realization of the true definition of laughter and what providing that laughter turned into, you know, and the amount of people that you were making feel happy at that moment. That became the new joy, the new love.
Right.
Making other people laugh, but be happy. I'm giving people a reason to be happy in that moment, and I love that. That became my fucking go. Yeah, that became my go.
Sure. Then you'll always be okay. You'll always be okay. You just look, just you stare at that, you focus on that.
As we choose.
And we're so lucky, so blessed that we can do it for as long as we can. You know, you watch these, you know, Drew Brees walking off the field Sunday, you know, that's it. That's the ride. That's your ride. Ride's over. And for us, the ride goes on and on. And if you stay on the path,
Does Jerry Seinfeld ever miss TV?
No. No.
Not at all. Not even a little bit.
Well, Kevin, I did TV. I really... I the ride I got doing that, and here's what's so intense. What was so intense about it? You're performing for a live audience, going out to 30 million people every week. Mm. There's nothing higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember doing a Tonight Show one time in between to promote the show at one point, thinking this is the smallest number of people that are going to see me this week. And the Tonight Show used to be this big thing, you know, whatever, it was 5 million people. But I never thought I would want to do another script and want to make something. Because I just love, I'm very happy in the life of stand-up. I love the life, you know. I'm in Chicago and Chris Rock's in town and we get together after at a restaurant. You know, I love that life. I love knocking around the clubs. I love working on stuff. But then this thing popped up and one of my writers from the show said, can we try and work on this? And I go, there's nothing here. This isn't anything. And he said, let's just try it. Just let's try one meeting. Just give me one meeting. And it was my idea that I had set pitch to him just to be funny. And we started and it's, you know, how when you're a kid, you had that hill and you had the sled on the snowy day and you take your sled out on the hill and you get on the sled, and you gotta kind of push to get it to start going down the hill. If you gotta push a lot, it's not a good hill. If you give one push and the sled starts going,
it's out. You're out of there.
Oh my shit, this thing's going down the hill.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, and that's what happened with this idea. And it just took off. And we've been doing it now about 6 months. And I haven't shown it to anybody. I haven't talked about it to anybody. But I know, you know, once this virus thing is over, we're going to be putting film and cameras and making this thing. And I'm going to be doing that again. It's not going to be a TV show. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an audience. But
I never thought
I would go back to scripts, dialogue, casting, mm-hmm. editing, you know, rehearsal, all that. I'm very happy in my work as a stand-up. Very happy.
Well, shows.
But this thing just happened, so that's what I'm working on now.
I love that you're just creative. You're creative, and you're creative in your world, in your own way, and it doesn't stop. Like your energy. It's just, dude, I'm telling you, it's visible.
Right.
It's fucking visible. It's so visible. Nice. Where are you at with stand-up right now? Are you working on anything?
Yeah, I've been writing. Well, I just did a special right before mm-hmm. the lockdown. And so, and then I had some stuff left over from that. And then I've been writing. So I either have a session on this script or I do my own sessions by myself, the way I like to do it. And I got a bunch of stuff and I got to, you know, go out to the clubs and put it together. Where are you at?
I got
your special. Last special was great.
I loved it, man.
It was great.
I fucking loved it. Right. You know what I'm at, man? I'm in this nice place. I'm in this nice place of growth and understanding with like adulthood. You know, like this fucking, like, I'm really embracing my 40s and I'm seeing all of the shit that's coming with it. And I had to talk with my wife and I was like, you know, for the last, I mean, I can't even say how many years, my life has really been about going to work and just wanting to be home because my work keeps me outside the house. When I'm filming a movie, when I'm on set, we're out of town, whatever, I'll come back on the weekends. But for the most part, I'll be gone. And I said, what I enjoy, I said, is the home. That's where my life is kind of, that my life is, that's where I've been the happiest. When I'm home, I'm with my kids, the wife, and we're chilling. And I said,
right.
You know, I gotta put us in some positions to do things outside of this when this is all over. Or I may just go do some shit for me.
What's over?
Well, over the
what
pandemic.
Do you mean? What's
this,
over?
You know, the thing that we're in. And I said, you know, because with the way that my mind is working now, I wanna be around some shit to see how I embrace it. Like I wanna do like a little travel thing just for me to go somewhere because I'm in such a strong thinking space that I know the material that would come out of me taking a nice little lap over the course of said days can only be good. It can only be good. I was supposed to take a business trip to China. I was supposed to do a business trip to China and stay for like 2.5 to 3 weeks. And of course we couldn't when all the shit happened. But I was so excited I was so excited because I had like, you know, I had a guy down there that was going to act as my, you know, my tour guide to show me around.
Right,
I had the whole thing set up. And I was like, my go to China and what happened in China experience is going to be fucking epic.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking at right now. I'm like, when I'm able to travel, I'm going to put 3 to 4, maybe 5 places together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go there. I'll have work to do there, but that's what my next thing is going to be about.
Right, right.
My decision to travel for me. Where am I going? I'm going to go to Egypt.
Right.
I'm going to go to China. I'm going to go to India. I've been dying to get over there. Yes, I have to. I've been dying to go there, but it's like it's doing my own fish out of water thing for me.
Right, right.
That's where I'm at. Right. That's where I'm at right now with the material. But of course, I'm excited to get back to stage. I think I want a total of 10 specials, and then I'm not going to want to do specials anymore. I still do comedy, but I'm not going to want to tape them to do specials. I'm gonna step.
Why? Why is that?
I don't know. I think 10 is my number. That's the number I put in my head. So I don't really, after that, because I set that goal for me.
How many have you done?
7.
Oh, you're almost done.
Almost.
I mean, I don't know. Why would you even think about, you know,
the ending or the number?
I tell you, like Kevin, like this thing that just happened to me, that I never wanted to do this. I never thought of anything. It's just like this guy says to me, come on, give me one writing session. Let's see if we can make this idea go. And then my whole life changed. So I couldn't possibly have seen that around the corner. I can't see that.
He said, then my life changed.
I've been going into marriage, Kevin. That's my I've been writing a lot about marriage. I wanted to do this thing about your spouse is a rescue pet. You look in your spouse's eyes and you know that they think they could survive on their own, but you know that they can't. They cannot make it without you. Each spouse thinks that of the other spouse.
You know, we had a real good, one of my favorite marriage bits. D.L. Hughley had a joke. He had a joke about, you know, him and his wife and how they, you know, how they going at it. And he was like, you know, I just know that if I were to die, things would change drastically. And I know that my kids were haters. He said they would go, it should have been you. because our life has changed since dad. It's the stupid shit. It's the stupid small shit that makes me laugh. You'll never run out of material with marriage. How long have you been married, Jerry?
21 years.
God damn.
Yeah.
21 years.
I got married in 99.
21 years. Congrats, man. What did you do for your 20th? Anything big for the 20th? It's your 20th anniversary. You didn't do anything crazy?
No. I also have a new bit about all marriage numbers get applause.
There is no...
No matter whatever number you say that you've been married, the audience will applaud because they are grateful that they were not involved in making this. Thank you.
Yeah, that's good.
For doing that. We're appreciative of it, but
we don't want it. We don't want that shit.
Yeah, we don't know what you went through. We just we can imagine there were some things. We don't know what they were. We imagine there were some things.
All right, guys, we got to stop. Hold on, Jerry. One more commercial break. I'm sorry. But I got to do it. Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll be back.
This is Inside Jokes with host Kevin Hart.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on @HeartbeatAudio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
This is Inside Jokes, hosted by Kevin Hart.
We are back, and you are listening to Inside Jokes. And today, we're talking to Jerry Seinfeld. God damn, what an amazing mind he has. Jerry, this is a good moment to go into your book, man. You got your first book.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm told, in 25 years? God damn, it's a long time. Is This Anything?
Yeah.
Is the title of the book.
Yeah, Is This Anything? It's what comedians say to each other when we're trying to find a joke.
Is this, you think, what do you think? Is this anything? Is anything here?
That's what we always say.
Is this something in there, right? A little bit.
So I kind of wrote the first 10 pages of it. I wrote about how I went from being a little kid and seeing this thing and falling in love with it and how I pursued it and just kind of got to the stage, you know? I just didn't think I was funny. I didn't know. I just wanted to get to that, to get up there, you know? And that's the first 10 pages. And then the rest of it is just my files that I kept all these years of all the bits I ever did that worked.
Holy cow.
And every bit. And I know some 450 pages of stuff in there. And
holy cow.
Yeah. And that's what the book is. And I, because I'm, when I turned 65, I thought, well, that's the end of regulation. I'm now in overtime.
Wow.
So I wanted to, and the same with that. My last special was, this is as good as I'll probably ever be. I'll do other stuff, but this is it. I want to leave. Here's my record. I'm turning in my papers. Here's where I got, you know, working at this. I wanted to leave it there for anyone who, you know, comes after us. Here's where I got to. It's like, you're more like explorers, you know?
That's so fucking dope, man. That's a 450 pages.
Yeah, from day one, from the first bit I ever wrote is in there about cereal. And
how do you have that still?
What?
How? Like you and when you did the movie Comedian, I was so blown away by Arnie Adams.
Arnie Adams, yeah.
When Arnie Adams showed his his files in how organized he was with his craft and how he approached writing.
Right.
I said, if that's what I'm supposed to do, I'm never going to make it.
There's no supposed to.
I don't stand a shot in this business. If that's how prepared I'm supposed to be, I'm, what the fuck am I doing? It was file cabinets, tabs, joke, concepts.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it. Was yours as organized and detailed as that, or you just had a bunch of notebooks all over the place?
I like the yellow legal pad. I like to jot stuff down on a yellow legal pad. I like the thickness of it. Mm-hmm. I like the softness of it. It's like it's firm, but it's got a density. When you write on a pen, on a legal pad, it just feels good.
Do you get to the end of the pad?
Oh, yeah.
You get to the last page, really?
Dozens, hundreds of them. And I finish big pens. I finish the big pen.
Jesus.
I watch the ink go all the way down to the end of the pen.
What am I doing? What am I fucking
doing? That's what I like to do. I just love it.
I gotta get a pad. Get a pad today.
You use the iPhone pad.
I use the iPhone. I use the BlackBerry. I use the Sidekick. I don't, Jerry, I can't find anything from like what I've done. I don't even have it.
But a set has so many bits in it. How do you, like, you go up to do a set, if you're going to do an hour and 15, an hour and 20, You have it in your head, right?
Well, I'm gonna tell you what I have, right? And it's funny because over the years this big thing, this like I've heard this rumor grow over the years. So I got my two guys. I got Joey and Harry, right? Joey and Harry have been with me for probably 10 years now, I would say.
Right.
Probably 9 to 10 years. We've known each other longer, but I mean, in our professional career, I would say 10. We're either right under or right over. And what I've always done, Jerry, I've never been a writer. Now, when I say writer, you know, this, you're using a word. You ever use a word but you're not using the word for, like, you know, the true definition of what the word is. Like, I'm using a word. So when I say writer, that means I've never jotted shit down. That's what I'm saying when I say it. The world and the journalists have taken it as, well, Kevin doesn't write his own stuff. Because I've said, Harry and Joey, well, those guys are my writers.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean when I say that is when I go on stage, Jerry, I have all of this shit in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I got it in my head. And I go, if this was a booth and I was a musician, I go and I just start.
Right.
And then after I start, I have this crazy fucking memory to where I come out of there and I remember the shit that I liked and I can go back in that booth again.
Right.
And leave out all the other stuff that I didn't like and do it with just the shit that I did.
Right, right.
So what Harry and Joey do, they jot down the shit that they feel was great that I said when I go up on stage and I'm working out material. So I only use bullet points.
Right.
I can't use bits. So their job is to give me my bullet points. I just came off. Tell me what my bullet points were. And they tell me all my topics. And then I start to rearrange my bullet points as I go on. So through the years, it's gotten even more. Oh, he has these writers and they write his jokes. What they do is they jot my bullet points down. I don't write, Jerry.
Right.
Like if I show you my section in my iPhone, it's stupid shit. You wouldn't understand it. It'll go, you know, it'll go first time visit at dentist in 3 years. Right. And in my head, I know what that means. In my head, I know what that means. You know, expensive purchase, no response. That was when I was fucking buying expensive shit because I thought that an immediate response from the world comes with expensive shit. Nobody noticed. Nobody noticed my expensive shit when I got it. Nobody said anything. I took it back. These are all things in my head. So I can't. That was about a watch. That's a true story. I bought this fucking watch.
That's the shit I like. That is a really small, little, funny human thing. You're doing the exact same thing. You're talking about taking something small and making it big. You think when you buy something expensive that everyone's going to notice.
Yes. It's the worst shit. It's the worst shit ever. Nobody says shit. And I don't think I've ever tried to make a bigger thing out of anything than when I got this one thing. I put it in everybody's face. Nobody ever said nothing. I'm taking it back. I'm taking it back. This means nothing. Nobody gives a shit about this. But that's what I do. So when you talk about writing, you're talking about on the pads and in the books. I've never done that.
Right.
I don't have that muscle. I don't have that machine.
Right.
But Jerry,
right.
The crazy thing, it's the same thing in movies. So after I read a script and I decide that I like the script, if we're going to do the movie, I'm like, oh, that movie's dope. I don't memorize lines. Like I don't prepare for script. I don't have to read a script and go over it and over. I don't do it. I've read it. I know what it is. Uh-huh. So when we show up in the morning and it's time to work, well, we got our sides. We go out to rehearsal. We read the scene. I'm like, okay, cool. I got it in my head. My memory is, it's unreal,
wow.
Jerry.
Wow.
It's unreal. I've never, hand on a Bible, I have never studied lines.
Really?
I have never. I don't care wow. how big the scene is. I don't care how much dialogue I have in a scene. Once I read it, I understand it. As long as I understand what's going on, I have the concept and it's in my head. So with stand-up, I never not understand the road that I'm going down,
right,
or how I'm navigating. So I don't have a problem with remembering the concepts. Now, you're going to leave pieces out, bits and pieces as you go. But then as the joke gets stronger and better, you know, you get more confident. That's literally how I've worked
right.
from day one.
Right.
That's why I'm so envious of the pad. You saying I went back and from day one.
What is the difference? What someone's technique is? What's the difference?
Well, the difference is you have a record of yours. I love that you have a record.
You have a video. You have a record on video. Same record.
Yeah, that's true. You think you're better than me because you thought of that just now, Jerry?
Yes.
You think you're better than me because you just came up with that amazing concept of.
Yeah.
of simplicity that I just couldn't grasp. I was, for me, this was the biggest problem in the world. I got nothing. He said, hey, dude, you got the video. Shit. All right, yeah. Solved. Problem solved. All right. I was ready to panic. I almost went off the deep end. Your book right now, man, where can people get your book? I don't want to just plug
anywhere.
Anywhere. Are you in a space where you feel like, you know, this, I like the book space. I'm a fan of the book space. Yes, I'm a fan of it. I love the idea of writing a book, putting a book on sale, because as you were talking before, it can be there forever. When people see you, if they chose to ask the question, I wonder if he's got a book or if he's written anything, I would love to see how he thinks or something. They can always go get it. A book is forever. I love it.
Well, the thing about the book was, I, when you get a little older, you start thinking about the young you and the other young yous that are out there. And I was obviously a totally different world in terms of access to comedians, like even just like a show like this. I never heard a comedian talk when I was a kid. What do they think? When I would see comedians do their stuff on TV, I thought that's how this guy talks. he just talks in jokes. Everything he says is a joke. I didn't know what it was, you know.
That's how he talked forever, all the time.
So this stuff that I wrote in the book, it's all double space, and you can look at it as a comedian. You would look at it and you would say, "Oh, I see how he set this up here," and it's double space. So you can look at it; it's like a blueprint of a bit. So you could really study it if you wanted to. How did he get 8 different jokes on a porta potty?
I'm not only going to get it. I'm going to get it, then I'm going to mail it to you so you can sign it. I don't want you to submit a signed copy.
Okay. Why don't you just let me just sign it and send it to you? Wouldn't that
it
be
would simpler? Be, but I was saying what I said to get you to say what you said. I didn't want to have to go through all that. I didn't want to have to go and actually buy it and do all that stuff. That's a lot, Jerry. That's a lot. Yeah, if you didn't say what you said, then I'm like, fuck, now I got to do all that shit and send it to him because I said it. If I don't, Jerry's going to remember. He's going to go, hey, I never got the book. It turns into a thing. So now that you said that, woo, wipe my forehead. That sweat's gone. Thank you, Jerry. I want a signed copy, man, for sure. Jerry, I knew that this would happen. I knew that this hour, I knew that it would fly. And I knew it would fly because of our relationship, you know, and how easy it is for us to talk to one another.
Yeah.
I'm excited for times to get back to the way that they once were. And I'm excited for now a new reason, which is to see this thing that I could hear your excitement for. And you don't voice that. That's not you. You don't do that. You know, it comes when it comes, and no, this is great. I've been doing this thing and there it is. But I can hear like a nice energy that you have behind it, man. And that makes me happy. That makes me happy to just see you in this space and see whatever the fuck it is.
Well, you're involved in it. You don't know it, but you are.
I love it. You already know, without a question, I'll be there if you ever need me to be there.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
I appreciate the brethren, and it's really cool. How cool is it? I mean, so you and I really, you talk about our relationship, we hung out really that one day,
mm-hmm.
right? Whatever it was, 3 hours. And in that day, that's it. You're friends for life now.
You're locked in.
And because of this brethren that we have because of what we do, and that's one of the great, great things of being a real comedian. There's the real comedians, you know. You know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
And we see that in each other, and that's an instant, permanent bond. And it's a beautiful, it's really nice.
It's. I'll say this before we go, you know, when you were talking about Bernie Mac, and you were talking about you met him once, you know, you don't need more. You don't need more than that moment with, like you said, with the real comedians. I met Bernie one time I met him one time where we actually had to talk and engage in a conversation. Right. He was filming a movie and he didn't have any time in the schedule. So they set it up for me to go to the movie set and sit with Bernie in his trailer. And it was supposed to be, like a 20-minute meeting. You know, we were going over this movie idea. Me and Bernie ended up sitting in his trailer for about an hour and 40 minutes. And his thing was, he kept saying, it's fine. They know what I mean. They're doing work. It's business. They're fine. We always rushing the motherfucker to not do nothing. He kept cussing at the first AD because he was like, y'all know y'all ain't even going to be ready. Let me finish. And we talked. And here's the thing. We were done the meeting in 15 to 20 minutes.
Right.
The rest of the time was conversation. We were just talking.
Right.
That's all. We were fucking talking.
Right.
Because he wanted to get to know me and he was asking questions and I was answering questions. But in my mind, I kept saying, it's so dope to see that Bernie Mac is one of the good ones. Like there was nothing that was forced.
Right.
There was no teeth pulling. There was none. And I say that to say, it's the same with you and I. Like, yep. It's never forced.
No.
There's never the double question of, so how's the kids?
Right?
You don't, it's never been, man. And I'm truly thankful for the friendship. I value the relationship. And you know, I can say that you're one of the dope ones, man.
Thank you.
You're dope as hell. I appreciate you. I appreciate you for doing this. I appreciate you for just being a good example of what to be in our craft. And like you said, man, it's all about, you know, us being under this thing together and doing our best to, you know, make it as great as we can for the next generation and generation.
Yeah. Let them look at us and go, okay, that I got to get to that. But let me ask you one last question before we go.
Okay.
Do you think I've forgotten about the steak?
Steak dinner? About the steak dinner. You see, I beat you to it. About the steak. No, you haven't. It's actually my priority as soon as this is over. Okay. I'm coming as soon as this is over.
It takes.
Okay, but it's going to happen.
I've already waited years and I can wait years more. But just so you know,
that you
I
know.
Have not forgotten.
I love you, man. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Inside Jokes. And today we were inside the brilliant mind of Jerry Seinfeld, man. Jerry, thank you again. I appreciate you. I'm here if you ever need me. You know that.
Inside Jokes is a SiriusXM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.